Kierkegaard, Copenhagen, 1841. A young man with brooding eyes paces his room, a ring in his hand. Søren Kierkegaard is about to make a fateful decision. He loves his fiancée Regine Olsen dearly, yet he feels compelled to break off the engagement. He believes his melancholy, his singular mission to understand existence, makes marriage impossible. With a heavy heart, he returns the ring to Regine, devastating them both. This act of personal sacrifice, choosing a solitary, dedicated life over worldly happiness, will define Kierkegaard's work as the first existentialist, wrestling with faith, despair, and what it means to truly become oneself. Søren Kierkegaard was born in 1813 in Copenhagen, Denmark, the youngest of seven children of a wealthy wool merchant. His father was stern, deeply pious, and prone to guilt and melancholy, traits he passed to Søren. Kierkegaard grew up in a house haunted by a sense of sin and religious intensity. His father believed he'd cursed their family by an impious act as a boy, and indeed, many of Søren's siblings died young, fueling that tragic belief. Kierkegaard studied theology and philosophy at the University of Copenhagen. He wasn't a diligent student at first. He spent a lot of time in the social scene of the city, writing satirical pieces and developing his wit. But tragedy and introspection in his mid-20s, especially his father's death, spurred him to find purpose. In 1840, he became engaged to Regine Olsen, then a teenager. But by 1841, after completing his thesis on Irony and Socrates, he famously broke the engagement. The precise reasons remain part of Kierkegaardian lore. Did he feel unworthy? Did he think his melancholy would ruin her life? Did he need to be alone to fulfill a divine calling as a writer? Possibly all of the above. Regine was heartbroken. Kierkegaard also suffered. He did love her, and later in life he never married, calling Regine his once and only love in his journals. Post-breakup, Kierkegaard threw himself into writing. Between 1843 and 1855, his death year, he produced a torrent of books under various pseudonyms. Why pseudonyms? Kierkegaard used them to present different viewpoints or existential stages without tying them directly to himself. It was part of his method to get readers to engage with ideas personally rather than authoritatively. He defined three stages on life's way: the aesthetic, the ethical, and the religious. These aren't strictly chronological ages, but modes of living. The aesthetic stage is characterized by pursuit of pleasure, novelty, and avoiding commitment. The aesthete lives for the moment, art, seduction, entertainment, but this leads to boredom and despair because it lacks lasting meaning. Kierkegaard's book, Either Or, 1843, illustrates this. Part 1, by the pseudonym A, shows an aesthete. The famous Diary of a Seducer is in there, plus essays on music and boredom. Part 2, by Judge B, presents the ethical stage, urging the young aesthete to choose commitment, marriage, responsibility, to find meaning in dedication and duty. The ethical stage is about commitment to societal duties, moral laws, and finding selfhood in responsible choices, like marriage, work, etc. Judge B argues that this is superior to the whimsical life of A because it gives coherence and purpose. You become a self by consistency over time, abiding by moral law. Yet Kierkegaard doesn't stop at the ethical. Above that is the religious stage, which Kierkegaard saw as the highest, but it's not institutional religion or complacent church-going. It's a deeply personal, paradoxical relationship with God that can sometimes clash with ethical norms. The prime example: Abraham being asked by God to sacrifice Isaac. Ethically, that's murder. Religiously, in faith, it's obedience to a divine command beyond reason. Kierkegaard explores this in Fear and Trembling, 1843, under pseudonym Johannes de Silentio. He praises Abraham as the knight of faith who trusts absurdly in God. Abraham believed somehow God wouldn't truly take Isaac or would give him back, by virtue of the absurd. He had faith he'd still be a father of a lineage. This faith is not rational. It's the teleological suspension of the ethical, suspending ethical duty to serve a higher purpose. That book introduced the world to the concept of the leap of faith. Kierkegaard argued that religious faith is not a matter of logical proof, but a passionate commitment despite uncertainty. It's filled with fear and trembling because it involves risk and cannot be mediated by universal reason. He often wrote how truth is subjectivity, not meaning truth is whatever you want. He wasn't a relativist, but that to truly grasp existential spiritual truth, one must appropriate it inwardly with all one's being. For instance, knowing about Christianity objectively, doctrines, history, means nothing unless it's subjectively embraced in Yivd faith. Kierkegaard's writing style was literary, rich with irony, parables, humor, and psychological insight. He was basically inventing what later came to be known as existentialism, focusing on the individual's subjective experience, choices, and relationship with ultimate questions like meaning, guilt, anxiety, and faith. He was a critic of the established Danish Lutheran Church. In his later works, Articles in the Moment, etc., he attacked the church for making faith too easy, comfortable, and societal. True Christianity to him was closer to the difficult path of Christ, requiring suffering, inwardness, and being at odds with the crowd. He said, "The crowd is untruth. Truth is often found in the individual against the masses." He struggled personally with depression, what he called the thorn in the flesh. He interpreted much of life's deep experiences through his own introspection, concepts like angst, anxiety. He wrote about a kind of existential anxiety that arises from our freedom, similar to later Sartre's and Heidegger's descriptions. Also, despair. In The Sickness Unto Death, 1849, under pseudonym Anticlimacus, he defines despair as a misrelation in the self, not being who you are truly before God. Despair is the sickness unto death, because it's a spiritual death if not cured by faith. He says there are types of despair. Despair of not knowing you're in despair, inauthentic life. Despair of not willing to be oneself, self-hatred, or escapism. And despair of willing to be oneself without God, defiant despair. The cure is essentially faith, restating a relationship with the divine who constituted the self. Kierkegaard died young at 42 in 1855, likely from complications of a spine injury and possibly tuberculosis. He collapsed in the street and was ill for weeks, refusing the sacrament from a pastor, consistent with his anti-church stance, though still a Christian in his own way. He left a trove of journals, which are as insightful as his published works, and which gave away that he was the pseudonymous authors of the various books. Something not publicly acknowledged during his life. His legacy was initially mostly in Scandinavian and German circles. But by the early 20th century, thinkers like Kafka, Nietzsche, indirectly Nietzsche likely never read Kierkegaard, but converged on some ideas about individual versus crowd, though Nietzsche was anti-Christian, and theologians like Karl Barth and existentialist theologians, Paul Tillich, etc., found inspiration in him. Then, in mid-20th century, secular existentialists like Sartre and Camus were influenced by his analysis of dread, freedom, and individual authenticity, though they rejected his leap to faith. Camus explicitly cites Kierkegaard's leap of faith as an intellectual suicide in his eyes, preferring to face absurd with defiance rather than resolving it with God. Kierkegaard's concept of the individual versus the crowd influenced later existentialist emphasis on authenticity, being true to oneself rather than conforming. His understanding of anxiety as stemming from freedom, the dizzying possibility of being able to choose. He analogized it to standing on a cliff and being anxious partly because you could throw yourself off, prefigured both existential psychology and even modern discussions of analysis paralysis or freedom's burden. In literature, his Seducer's Diary in Either Or is seen as a classic portrayal of a Don Juan type. It inspired other psychological novels exploring manipulative characters. Some see echoes in Nabokov's work, for example. His thoughts on faith influenced Christian existentialists, like Martin Buber's I-Thou relationship owes something to Kierkegaard's idea of relating individually to God, not through doctrines or institutions. Kierkegaard is often called the father of existentialism, especially Christian existentialism. He insisted on the subjective truth, that the value of a belief lies in how passionately and sincerely one holds it, not merely its objective evidence. He famously even said that the most important truth is that for which one can live or die. Though he didn't mean any belief goes, he assumed the Christian gospel is that truth worth living, dying for. He also pioneered the idea of indirect communication, writing in ways that force the reader to engage and make up their own mind, hence the pseudonyms and ironies. He believed truth about existence cannot just be handed over didactically. one must come to it. Kierkegaard was relatively unknown outside Denmark until translations in early 20th century. Now his works are world classics in philosophy and theology, studied both for their content and literary form. Critics of Kierkegaard might say he overemphasized the solitary individual and had an irrational streak. The leap of faith is often critiqued as endorsing belief without evidence, something rationalists find problematic. His personal life choices, like breaking the engagement, have been psychoanalyzed. Some say he fetishized suffering or made Regine a sort of muse for his philosophy at her expense. But Kierkegaard's defense would be that he felt called to do what he did, that he believed each person has to make a fear and trembling decision before God at some point, and that his writing might help others in their existential crises find their way, be it to faith or at least to authenticity. Indeed, many readers through the decades have found comfort in his honest examination of despair and faith. He doesn't sugarcoat the difficulty of believing in the face of absurdity or the pain of being an individual responsible for one's own meaning. Thus, even secular readers who don't share his Christianity find in him a kindred spirit in challenging complacency and facing the human condition head-on. Kierkegaard's life itself becomes almost a parable. He gave up worldly joy, Regine, career prestige. He never took a cushy pastor job or professorship, living modestly off his inheritance while writing, to pursue spiritual truth. Whether one sees that as heroic or needlessly self-denying, it certainly exemplifies his philosophy of the single individual standing alone before God, or the unknown, making choices with existential weight. In summary, Kierkegaard carved a path for thinking about life not as an abstract problem, but as a drama each person lives through. He taught that living authentically often means standing apart from the crowd and making leaps that reason cannot fully justify, whether that's in love, commitment, or faith. And he insisted that doing so, while it entails anxiety, is the only way to become a true self. That message continues to resonate in our age of anxiety, making Kierkegaard uncannily relatable over 150 years later, as if he were a contemporary writing about our inner dilemmas. The melancholy Dane, as he's nicknamed, spoke deeply to the human heart, and for that, generations of readers have been grateful, even if slightly disturbed, at how well he seems to understand their secret fears and hopes.